Hello, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman, and I'm here with my co-host, Laura Chan Baker.
Hola.
I'm just going to say hi. I tried hola last week. Didn't really work.
I'm sticking with it.
Here at Jackie Winter, our roles put us right in the center of the action, in between client and creative, so we get to see all sides of the process. This season, as Laura eats her way around Mexico, the two of us are coming together via the wonders of the internet to look at what's shaping the issues, processes, happenings, and ideas across the creative industries today. This week, we're going through our open tabs and we'll be discussing nonsensical ideas and how to get your emails returned, as well as what else is in our open tabs. Laura, first things first. Again, what's the best thing that you've eaten this week?
Oof, again, it's a bloody hard choice. There are many, many things to pick from, but I had the other day the most awesome flan. I love flan so much, but it was a proper like cheese flan. So like it was like, got that crumbly texture, none of that creme caramel bullshit that you get in like Woolies in Melbourne. This was like a proper, proper traditional flan, and oof, it made my week.
I mean, your food journey has just been so inspiring, just because like, I don't know, like I
am
eat
very
something
inspiring.
Like, you really are, but I eat something kind of slightly different and it just kind of kills me. Like I can't do it. Like my body can't process it. I don't know how you had all this kind of variety kind of coming in and have not like, you know, suffered some catastrophic gastrointestinal illness, but you're doing fantastic.
Hey,
you're
who thriving. Says I haven't? I'm just, the okay. Food is worth it.
You're just not, that's not making its way to your Instagram feed, which I highly recommend. What will you publicly,
hell yeah.
What is your kind of,
are you kidding me? I love sharing my life with the world.
What is your Instagram handle?
My Instagram handle is Lara_highres.tiff. So TIFF. Lara_highres.tiff.
If you want to follow along,
me,
which
babes.
I suggest you do. Anyway, we're deep into, or not deep, we're kind of, you know, one episode into, or two episodes into our seventh season, taking a bit of an abbreviated turn with just me and Laura for the next kind of, I guess, couple of months.
Hey, we're enough.
Yeah. We are enough. We are enough. And going through our open tabs as we do every week, I'm going to get things started with a piece from the New York Times titled How to Get Every Email Returned. And this is probably, I would have to say, my biggest pet peeve. I often go to sleep at night thinking about the emails that were not responded to. And I visualize the scenario in which like someone has seen my email and not decided not to respond it to. But look, I think there's two sides to the story. I mean, there's sending cold emails, which we have to do a lot of the time here, and I have to do personally, whether it's kind of finding speakers for creative mornings or trying to drum up new business or reconnect with kind of old people as well. It's often expected that these kind of emails will not be returned. And last week we spoke about how important it is when, especially cold emailing agents, in terms of making sure you're taking a considered approach, following submission guidelines, et cetera. And, you know, up until around 3 years ago, we actually did take the time to answer every submission one by one. But in recent times, we've had to reset expectations with an autoresponder as well as on our own submissions guideline pages on how this kind of may or may not be possible. And I think no matter what, I know we've discussed in this podcast before, sending someone an email is essentially making work for someone else. Like by sending them an email, whether they're a colleague or anything, like you're asking them, you're asking of their time to kind of read it. If you're asking a task or asking them to do something kind of for you, then there's even kind of more on top of that. And I think people are just kind of generally, you know, overloaded in kind of lots of ways. So I'm prefacing this entire thing by saying true consideration should really be sent to every email that you send, keeping the other person's time in mind. And also, to be honest, kind of your own time as well. To that end, in many cold emails I send, I always make sure that I give an out or some sort of kind of condition. Like for creative mornings, for example, it can be really hard to dangle an invitation for someone to speak, but you need to kind of know by a certain time. And so, you know, sometimes I kind of put that out there in terms of what the time frame is. And then if we don't hear from them by a certain time frame, kind of what's going to happen. So therefore, we don't get into a situation where someone takes too long to respond, then we've already kind of moved down our shortlist, kind of things like that. But I think one of the most frustrating things is when someone wants something from you and then doesn't respond to an email. And so, I mean, look, I get it. The whole thing about email guilt is very real. I mean, I never kind of want to, you know, let people down. And, you know, we have things like email debt forgiveness day or email like a CEO, different kind of techniques that people try to do to kind of cut down on their emails. But oh my God, this is the longest intro ever kind of to this piece that I haven't even kind of talked about yet. But anyway, this is something very close to my heart. And I think to all of our, you know, work, as we're a primarily email-driven business. So when I saw this pop up in our professional development Slack, I knew I had to talk about it. Again, the title of the piece is How to Get Every Email Returned, or at least How to Try, and it's by Trish Hall. And I knew it would be ripe for discussion, especially here with Laura, after I saw Trish's bio, which flagged her as the author of Writing to Persuade, How to Bring People Over to Your Side, something pretty much that sums up what we do every day here at Jackie Winter. And also interesting as well, like this is kind of a bit of a trend that I'm seeing, because Laura, your piece this week as well, which we'll get into, is also kind of a somewhat like a book synopsis as well. It's kind of like people write these pieces kind of summarizing a book that they kind of have in at the moment. And it's kind of great because I don't have to read the book, because I feel like I'm kind
of... That is exactly the opposite of what they're trying to do, Jeremy, but all right.
In the article, Trish starts out by saying, and I quote here, on average, American adults are texting about 30 times a day, twice what they did back in 2011. Not long ago, these people would have made a phone call. Now no one does that except telemarketers who wake you in the middle of the night. So many words, and too often they are neither convincing nor entertaining. There are ways, however, to write persuasively in your everyday life. It's so funny. I was trying to do one of our web developers, I just had an issue with something and I kind of sent him an SMS, and then he called me. I was like so shocked that he called me to kind of do this kind of tech support, because I'm so he's doing everything over iMessage at the moment. So anyway, she outlines a few different ways that we can make our writing a bit more kind of persuasive. And I think she's making a pretty great example for this. I mean, last week we talked about different things that different phrases that kind of trap freelancers. And what I kind of mentioned there was I didn't like that there wasn't kind of a bit more kind of education there, or kind of response that you kind of could say. And I really like, even though this piece is really short, there's some amazing information here in terms of how she kind of outlines, you know, what is kind of good and what is a bad example. Basically, she outlines kind of five methods in this article. And I'll just outline here is tell the truth, be quick about it, just ask, know your audience, that means listening, and banish jargon. Now, as always, simple truths that most people ignore or simply do not do, which could also be another great subtitle for our podcast. But there's definitely some learning to be had here. I mean, I'm pretty guilty as charged with the be quick about it line, as someone who's known to write multi-page emails designed to be read on the toilet. But just as she says, know your audience. I still think there's place for long form emails. And I think especially when you're in terms of who you're communicating to, like, you know, writing an email to your family or a friend, kind of, you know, filling them in on your life or trying to kind of have a bit more kind of dialogue is definitely a different function to kind of a work related email. But look, I want to read verbatim one of my favorite ones here, which is kind of so relevant for us in the creative industries. And this goes under the heading Just Ask. I'll just read this here. People underestimate the value of just asking for what they want. Research shows that even strangers are more willing to help than we expect. Don't apologize and be direct. If you do ask and you are rejected, you've lost nothing. People are loath to ask for help because they fear rejection. They're anxious and they're embarrassed, but humans are wired to want to help. It's not hard to understand the psychology. Just look at yourself. When someone asks you to attend a party or give them a ride, you probably make an effort to do it, even if you don't really want to. And she then gives this example on trying to get someone to show up. And the no example is, dear everyone, I'm involved with a group that gives scholarships to young people, and I'm hoping that some of you might be able to attend our celebration next Monday. Let me know if you can. That was the negative example. And the positive example, she posits, dear Trish, I'm involved with a group that gives scholarships to young people, and I'm hoping that you can attend our celebration next Monday. A number of people you know, including John and Jim, will be there. Can I leave your name at the door? It's 6 p.m. at the Historical Society Building. Why? It's personal, so you have to answer. There would be a social cost in skipping a reply. Now, I love this example because it has kind of one thing that I'm really trying to kind of phase out of my own communication, which is let me know if you can, or just kind of let me know. I think that's just kind of a really lazy way to kind of, you know, to write an email. And I think one of the issues that we have, like just as we talked about last week about, you know, open briefs, like, you know, an open brief is really a bad thing because it just kind of, it just showcases your kind of laziness. Like you want to kind of put something out there to kind of get it started and then just kind of react to it kind of on the fly, kind of in motion. But I think one of the best things that what good producers do is really kind of writing emails like this in the positive example that we showed here, making it personal, kind of giving the person an option, like giving them a framework to actually kind of respond back kind of into, making it kind of about the benefits that, you know, that they will kind of get from it in terms of who's going to be there. There's a lot of consideration that's gone in there, even though it's kind of only a 3-line email. Not only does it kind of show that the email's been kind of considered, but that other actions and there are things outside of the email that have happened that have kind of taken that person into consideration. So again, amazing work done here, I think, in such a small space. And again, just kind of reinforcing the value that writing has as producers in the creative industry to get a creative project happening, because you're trying to give a framework to all this kind of subjective work. So Laura, I know this isn't a new topic. Again, we're always talking about how writing is a key skill for us in so many ways. So I'm curious to know, have you adapted any of these tactics during your time as a producer? Or if not, like, would you have anything new that you would add to it?
It's so funny. I was thinking today about how when I was at Jackie Winter and I was getting 7 trillion emails a day, I noticed less when people took a long time to reply or didn't reply because I just had so much other stuff to think about. And right now, it's like the weirdest thing. I've gone from having like a billion emails to like basically none. It's a very strange feeling. And I know that sounds like a very good thing and very enviable, but like it's kind of lonely. Like it's weird. And now I notice very much when someone doesn't respond to me because I've got no one else to talk to. But no, I loved this piece. I wish it was longer. I am really keen that, you know, the marketing worked on me. I'm really keen to read Trisha's book when it eventually comes out. Did you see that she spent nearly like 5 years as the op-ed editor at the New York Times? So, you know, she knows her stuff.
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah. And I really love the scenarios that she used to illustrate each bit of advice. The first one hit especially close to home for me, where she's talking about telling the truth. The key thing here, it isn't just telling the truth, it's telling the right truth, because there are always many ways to spin the facts. And the example that she gives is someone who's texting their friend because they're running late. And so like what not to do is a text like, "Subway broke down, see you soon." And what you should do instead is something like, "15 minutes late, so sorry, first drink on me." And the difference there is in taking responsibility, and that accountability is refreshing and it stands the test of time. And I am notorious for sending the train broke down message. And to be fair, the trains break down a lot where I live, but the person receiving the message doesn't care. Or maybe they care the first time, but not the fourth or the 14th. And I need to remember that. The other one I really resonated with here was know your audience. That means listening. And Trish writes, "We're persuaded by people who make it clear they understand us, that they relate to our concerns. So seek out those opportunities for connection. If you are warm and friendly and seem like you've tried to understand me, I'll be more likely to go along with you. Think about this in everything you write. What does your audience, whether one person or 50, really want to hear?" And then she gives an example of a condolence letter, and her what not to do is, "Dear so-and-so, I was so sorry to hear about your father. It's very hard to go through that. I'm thinking of you." What to do, the example was, "Dear so-and-so, I was so sorry to hear about your father. I remember the time he came to my Thanksgiving and you and I imagined for just a minute what it would be like if he got together with my mother. He was kind and charming like you, and I'm glad I got the chance to meet him. I am thinking of you." And this for me is very often the difference between good and bad writing, especially when it comes to business. I think no matter who I'm talking to or the style of writing, whether it's formal, very casual, somewhere in between, avoiding cliches, writing with real empathy for your audience and showing some of your personality all go a really long way towards getting a positive response, or at least a response at all. And I really think you don't have to be a professional writer to do this. You just don't be a robot. Like, think about who you're talking to, what their motivations and needs are, and keep that in mind with everything that you type. And I mean, it's like building a habit. You know, you do that often enough, it really does become second nature. And I can tell you for sure that I get a way better response when people feel like I'm speaking very personally to them. And it's totally possible to do this, even with things that will be read by groups of people. All the best copywriting does that. And we've all been exposed to it before, you know. And I think additionally, her point about banishing jargon is great too, because you can pretty much write off cliches and jargon altogether. They kind of cancel themselves out, right? Like, people don't take in what you've said because those words and phrases just kind of glide over you. And it just, it's far better to speak with simple language that's bespoke and empathetic than to use these kind of complicated terms that they might not even understand at all. And the last thing I'll add is that if you want a response, and this definitely goes to what you were saying, Jeremy, is make it easy to respond. You know, I think, as you said, there definitely is a place for long emails, as anyone who's received an email from me will know. And I don't always write long ones, but I often do. And I just think even if you do have to write a really long email with lots of info and points, then at least like format it really clearly so they can jump to the bits that they need to. And at the end, include, or at the beginning as well, I often do at the beginning and at the end, a dot point list of the questions that you asked or the things that you need from them so that they can just refer to that and not have to scan back through the whole email, because they won't. Also with that, trying not to make things too open-ended if you can avoid it. But sometimes things have to be open-ended, at least if you can kind of dot point exactly what it is you need from them, exactly what those next steps are, and they don't have to read through the entire big long thing over again. that goes an enormous long way to getting busy people to actually get back to you.
Really good stuff in there. Thank you for your comments, Lara. And I think we'll move on to our final link from here. Next up, our last link for the week. Lara, what do you got for us?
Oh, okay. So last week I said I had clickbait, but this week I really do have clickbait. I just don't know what's going on with my RSS at the moment. It's like not giving up the goods. But anyway, this piece comes from entrepreneur.com, which very annoyingly has recognized that I'm currently in Mexico and is displaying the whole site in Spanish with like no option to switch back to English. It's killing me. This keeps happening to me. And to be fair, my Spanish is getting so much better. Like it's all my childhood Spanish is like coming back to me and I'm able to actually properly have conversations with people now. But reading entrepreneur.com in Spanish is not what I was after. But anyway, the article, it's entitled "The Best Ideas Are the Ones That Make the Least Sense." And it's a little bit silly in places, if I'm being honest, but I do like the overall sentiment. And the author, he spent 30 years at Ogilvy, so he knows his stuff. And he even founded this division at Ogilvy that employs graduates to search for logical solutions to problems. And they have this mantra of like, you know, test counterintuitive things because no one else ever does, which I think sounds like a wonderful sort of way to expand a graduate's mind and to kind of stumble across some interesting things. So basically in this piece, he makes a case for being illogical and how that can be kind of uniquely powerful. He writes, and I quote here, "Alongside the inarguably valuable products of science and logic, there are also hundreds of seemingly irrational solutions to human problems just waiting to be discovered, if only we dare to abandon conventional logic in the search for answers. What entrepreneurs know is that logic gets you to exactly the same place as your competitors. In fact, entrepreneurs are disproportionately valuable precisely because they are not confined to doing those things that make sense to a committee." And he includes a range of examples like Red Bull, which was released as a challenge to Coca-Cola. And rather than being kind of more delicious and cheaper and bigger and whatever, it was actually a lot more expensive, tiny, and tasted gross, according to a lot of consumer research. But they now sell 6 billion cans annually. And the author sort of asks why. And he attributes it to stumbling onto a kind of psychological magic trick in the same way that Dyson, Apple, Starbucks, that, you know, they've all done the same thing. They've kind of embraced the idea that anything from consumer behavior to people's perception of a product can be transformed. And that's because we don't value things, we value their meaning. What they are is determined by the laws of physics, but what they mean is determined by the laws of psychology. It's kind of this is kind of the basics of sales, right? Like anyone who's done any kind of sales training, or even just freelancers who are good at selling themselves, kind of know this, right? And he cites a test that ad agency J. Walter Thompson used to give to aspiring copywriters. And it included the question, here are two identical 25-cent coins. Sell me the one on the right. One of their successful candidates really understood this concept and they wrote, I'll take the right-hand coin and dip it in Marilyn Monroe's bag. Then I'll sell you a genuine 25-cent coin as owned by Marilyn Monroe. And I think, you know, there are many ways to do this in all industries, but at the core of it is kind of challenging the given explanation for something and considering the alternatives, no matter how illogical, irrational, and counterintuitive they might seem on the surface. And I mean, this is a pretty common brainstorming technique too. I'm sure that I've been in conference workshops where they've made us, you know, like come up with the dumbest ideas possible to solve the problem. And through that, we've actually kind of landed on some really interesting things, some very unique things. And Jeremy, I don't know, you're an entrepreneur, you have some crazy ideas yourself. And I know that you go on gut a lot, even if it might sometimes go against what others recommend. And I've always really admired that, even when I haven't always agreed with what you're doing, and I'm almost always proved totally wrong in the end. Tell me about some of your past ventures that people thought were a bit nuts, but that you were sure would work.
Can you tell me one? Because I was really struggling with this a bit. Like I was thinking about it and kind of like, I don't know, like I think that's the, I always had a certain amount of confidence that everything would work, or kind of, you know, yeah, that kind of intuition there.
But that's it. It's intuition.
At the kind of core of something.
Where does because I feel like you're not always one to do like a huge amount of research before you launch something or before you dive into something. Do you know what I mean? I don't mean that as criticism. It's the way that work, you know, but the fact that you have that intuition is pretty unique. Not a lot of people function that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I kind of consider it just like a really kind of basic thing. And I mean, just like we were talking about last week about kind of what makes kind of a good folio. I think, you know, by showing your folio to a lot of people, you're going to know what kind of makes a good folio. So I think, you know, for me, because I was an art director and I was kind of commissioning illustration, like I kind of, you know, was in that role and I kind of knew what it was going to be kind of on the other side. I think what, you know, what's really problematic for me about this article, and I almost kind of think it's really kind of funny, like, so this again, it's an excerpt of a book and the book is called Alchemy, The Dark Art and Curious Science of Creating Magic in Brands, Business and Life. But but alchemy, as in terms of what it was, like, it never worked. Like, the whole idea was like you had these crazy people thought that they could kind of purify and change actually metals like into gold, and nobody could. And the one visual metaphor that kind of comes out when I think about like what alchemy is the idea of polishing a turd, that you can actually take something shitty and just rub it gently enough like with a cloth until it gets kind of shiny.
But marketers do that all the time.
Well, exactly. And that's kind of why I kind of came at this, I just like felt really kind of dark about this piece. And look, I think there's something really interesting here in terms of looking at our kind of own kind of psychology and kind of something that I kind of note that I kind of struggle with kind of on a personal level, like this whole idea of kind of what you resist kind of persists. Like there is a lot of the kind of the way we think and behave is incredibly irrational, just kind of as humans. So, you know, about like kind of the pink elephant thing where it kind of someone tells you, don't think of a pink elephant, don't think of a pink elephant for 60 seconds. All you're going to think about is kind of a pink elephant. So whatever you kind of try to kind of get away from, like, yeah, paradoxically, you will be kind of drawn toward. So I think, you know, a lot of, like, I think advertising and marketing kind of uses that tendency sometimes in a pretty negative way to get you to manipulate kind of behavior. So I kind of think, yeah, that's kind of something that I think we're all kind of struggling against. But at the same time, there's kind of this deep circuitry that kind of is kind of making us kind of go to it. I think all the examples here are really, I don't want to boil this down to something just so basic, but it's really just about basic problem solving. It's like, yeah, you can put all the kind of stories about kind of Red Bull that you kind of want, but at the end of the day, you know, people just want a kind of a way to
stay awake,
kind of, you know, to stay awake. And they put some great marketing around it that I think kind of spun it off into kind of to something else. But I think if I'm taking this as a kind of personal level, it's like everything was just kind of, you know, finding a kind of a problem and just kind of and solving it kind of for us. And I think everything that we've done, I've always kind of gone in and said like, okay, well, this, like, you know, use it or lose it, the most recent thing that we've done, it's like we have trouble explaining licensing. It's like other people have this kind of problem as well. We should, like, if we do something that addresses this, then surely, you know, other people will kind of, you know, will like it. I think the trouble now is that everybody is trying to find problems to solve. You know, everyone's trying to disrupt an industry, cross-pollinate kind of different brands, kind of put things together. And I don't know, like, I think that, I think I'm a bit out of touch. Like, I think if I was trying to kind of come up with some kind of something new, or kind of if I was kind of tasked with an existing brand and trying to do something new in this atmosphere, I would find it really difficult.
I
would look for any help that I could get, you know, including, you know, alchemy. But I kind of think, you know, it's really just about kind of getting back to basics and kind of being in, like, just really being in touch kind of with what the problem is, and then making sure that you're actually kind of doing something that is solving a problem.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as I said, the article's not the best one we've ever looked at. But I guess what I would take away from it is I liked the sentiment of not going with necessarily the obvious solution. So even just going back to the Coca-Cola example, which, as you said, you look at it from the other side and it's completely logical. But I think it would be easy to kind of assume straight away that, like, to win in a market, you have to be cheaper, or you have to be necessarily, like, better than the existing product in that same kind of category, you know, in the same way. But that's not always the case. And I think you need to kind of exercise those mental muscles to be able to kind of to think weirdly. You know what I mean? Like, to think of ideas that might seem strange, but may actually have some merit when you dig a bit deeper, and being comfortable with brainstorming and suggesting things that are maybe going to be terrible is actually kind of hard. Like, you know, especially if you're doing it with a group within a company, it can be hard to suggest things that are kind of dumb. Do you know what I mean? And I think becoming comfortable with that can help you come up with something sort of a bit more interesting, whether you're solving a giant sort of brand problem or your own kind of personal problems in life. There's something to take away there, hopefully.
Absolutely. And definitely. And And I think like this goes beyond kind of entrepreneurs as well, and kind of into kind of artists as well, in terms of kind of how they're looking at, you know, their work as well. Like, you know, we talked about this again last week in terms of kind of folios, in terms of kind of style, and, you know, what you're actually kind of bring kind of to the table. And I kind of think that as kind of artists, like, you know, you can think of your work as a product kind of in that way, and it has to be kind of solving some kind of need that's kind of in the marketplace. So I don't think that's a cynical way to kind of look at how you work and kind of develop your work. But I kind of think, again, a lot of these kind of thoughts and kind of methods can definitely have a lot of application, you know, to, you know, art and kind of illustration or design or anything, you know, and not just kind of, you know, making your startup or whatever. So Laura, thank you for bringing it to the table. Much appreciated.
You are welcome.
Before we wrap up, we are going to our kind of recently revisited Open Tabs kind of idea. So, you know, when we do Open Tabs kind of IRL, we have four speakers. They go through all the kind of, not all, but 10 of their open kind of browser tabs are around a minute each. It's kind of a combination of what we do at Creative Mornings and Pachakacha, just kind of putting this kind of framework around using the internet kind of as this lens. So every week here for this season, we're going to be kind of just pulling up three links from our browsers this week. In my open tabs, well, Laura, I must say that currently I have a unsubscribe button to Duralift News. Of course, you know, Australia's first Jibby boom lift is coming to Duralift. I need to know about this. But the reason it's in my browser tab is because I'm literally unsubscribing from about 3 million newsletters that you somehow were signed up to, that we are consistently unsubscribing to every day. So
yes, because for anyone who doesn't realize, like, my Jackie Winter email is now forwarding just to everyone at Jackie Winter because I'm in Mexico.
Oh my God. I kind of feel like I'm every day, I don't know, like, is she just fucking with us? Like, did she just like sign up to every newsletter before she left? Or was this just some kind of weird compulsion? Anyway.
No, I have a lot of newsletters, but I also had a lot of them just like filtered. And then I forgot about the filter and I never looked at it. So to me, it kind of felt like I'd already unsubscribed. But then of course, when it forwards to you, you don't have any of those filters and you're getting all of the random shit.
Anyway, I don't like it. It's in my open tabs. Also in my open tabs, got lots of Google search results I need to get back to. The first one being best winter soups, because it is very cold. And I think, you know,
it ain't, mate.
Well, I'm really going to get into soup this winter. It's something that's kind of happening. I'm just trying to reconcile the whole idea of like having to kind of roast the vegetables before making them into the soup, but that's a separate discussion. It's a separate tab. And finally, I've got a Google search result for books to read if you like The Goldfinch, because I just finished The Goldfinch a few weeks ago. It's all I could think about. It's all I could talk about. I just want to like erase it from my brain so I can read it again. The movie trailer came out literally the day before I finished the book, and I saw it. I cried. I can't wait to see it. It's such an amazing book. I can't talk enough about it. Laura, what's in your open tabs?
I don't know what The Goldfinch is, but we'll talk about that later. I have three tabs as well. The first is, people just need to go and watch this, but it was this like team of researchers from Stanford and a bunch of other places basically have developed this insane way to edit video using text. And it's absolutely insane how realistic it is. They can take a video, let's say they could take a video of me saying this exact sentence right now, and they could change some of the words, they could cut out words, they could add new words, basically using these insane like artificial intelligence systems. And it's both incredibly exciting and incredibly scary. And I love this stuff so much, but it's a proposal for the SIGGRAPH conference this year. And we will post a link to that because it's so cool. Then my next link, almost everything I'm like Googling at the moment is to do with like my travel, right? It's like how to get somewhere or what restaurant should I eat at? And I am doing a bunch of travel around a bunch of random sort of states and small towns and stuff around Mexico. And there's this like really big sort of bus system. There's like 13 different sort of bus companies that do all this great regional travel. It's awesome, but they are insanely complicated to navigate. So I found this amazing blog post called My Wanderlusty Life. But it was about like making sense of Mexico's bus system. And it is incredible. Like, firstly, it's written really funny, but also she's like so perfectly like with screenshots and directions, like everything on like how to book the different things. It's amazing. So I'm very grateful for that. The last thing that I have had open today is, Jeremy, did you see that like Twitter thing that went viral? I'm going to hope it's true because it's such a good story. But that guy who's like, who was like leaving flowers at the at a random grave. Did you hear about this?
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, look, if anyone doesn't know, it's a very funny story. I'm not going to give away the ending. We'll just post the link. Go have a read of the Twitter thread.
Amazing. We'll put all of these links on our show notes as we do every week. But before we go, it's time for our final segment, Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, Shaka, the time we dedicate each week to get the good, the bad, and the other word that I didn't have a chance to look up in the thesaurus off of our chest. Laura, what do you got this week?
You're doing so good, Jeremy. Hey, I'm not even sure if this is a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a shaka, but it was definitely amusing. So I went to the club the other night. I made some friends here in Mexico City because I'm a social butterfly. And we went out to the club and the girls in Mexico are so beautiful. Like it's fucked up. And they get really dressed up to go out and they all looked stunning. And when we walked in to the club, they started like, they immediately sort of like gave the phone, that one of their phones, to the like waiter or something to take photos. And suddenly all these security guards rushed over and I was like, oh shit, like what's about to happen? And they all pulled out of their pockets like these little torches to light the photos. And so you've got like the security guards standing kind of like in a, there's like four of them with the group of girls ready to have the photo taken. And the security guards like lighting them and they just automatically do it. You pull out the phone and security guards run over with lights ready to make you look absolutely perfect for your Instagram shot. It was amazing.
Oh my God. That is incredible. I love it.
Well, Jerry, what about you?
I got a thumbs up this week for kind of another New York Times related thing. And this is for a specific segment they do every year. Well, I don't know how long they've been doing it for, but it's called Puzzle Mania, which is kind of like a lift out that they do just all with different kind of puzzles. So it was edited by Will Shorts, the crossword puzzle editor. There's a mega crossword puzzle kind of in the middle, but then all these different kind of other puzzles in it, like just puzzles that I've never, like, you know, spiral crosswords and kind of these a whole kind of photo puzzle as well. Like it was like a little murder mystery kind of told in photos that you had to solve, and just like really, really amazing. The brains that you need to have to put these puzzles together. It's just like, it's really just kind of looking at,
how do we get, like, our hands on it here?
Well, it's a lift. I had to get Bianca to get me a copy and post it over to me when it came out. But I don't know if they're like, it's a whole kind of thing. It's in print. I don't know if it's kind of online at all, but yeah, keep an eye out for it for next year. It's on Puzzle Mania from the New York Times. And we will post a link to this and everything we talked about in our show notes. But otherwise, I think that'll do us for this week. I'm Jeremy Wartzman. She's Laura Chan Baker. And this has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Our theme music is by totally unrelated to our company, Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/Jackie Winter. And if you want more of the podcast, archives of all of our shows and the links we've covered can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. To receive all the links we talk about in the show each week in one neat little package, you can sign up to our newsletter at jwg.iz/newslettering. You can also find us mostly on Instagram at Jackie Winter and hit us up with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Remember that this is an enhanced podcast. If you listen to this using Pocket Cast, Overcast, or Castro, you'll be able to see links to the articles as we're talking about them, as well as other visual content. And if you work for an ad agency, design studio, etc., and are interested in our live extended version of the show called Open Tabs, be sure to check out opentabs.rodeo for more info. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week. Bye-bye. Two of us are coming together via the wonders of the internet to look at what's shaping the to look at this season as Laura eats her way around Mexico to find herself and to find food and to find other things.